You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Her debut short story collection called One More Year, Sana Krasikov writes about the lives of immigrants from the former Soviet Union, blending themes of displacement and survival. She was a guest on the show a few months ago, and I began by noting that her writing career had gotten off to a great start. Her first ever published story was in The New Yorker. I asked her if she had just sent it into them unsolicited.
No, I didn't. I think they had a debut fiction issue, which another story of mine actually did not make it into, but they were interested in seeing more work. So I sent some more, and one of them they liked. So
many of the characters in your stories have links to the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, which, of course, is in the news right now. Are you thinking about Georgia at all nowadays because in relation to your work?
It doesn't figure into what I'm working on now, but we certainly have friends there, and personally, I'm interested in it.
Well, do you think that some of these stories might have been a little different if you had created them after the invasion of Georgia by Russia?
I'm not sure. I mean, the relationship between those two countries has been strained for some time, and it's. It's horrible to watch what's happening, but it's not entirely a surprise considering how the diplomatic relationship between those countries has been breaking down.
Many of these stories are about these immigrants trying to balance two worlds, the old world and the new world, the country that they have immigrated to. Is that based on your own personal experience?
I think I can certainly relate to that feeling of being between heaven and earth and not knowing which is which. But I'm not sure I would even characterize it as an old world, new world kind of dichotomy. I think it's kind of a post-migration world in some ways because it's easier to move around. The world's gotten smaller, and it's not always clear on where it's better, where life is better.
Well, I was thinking about your story, Asal, where these women are living in a polygamous relationship in New York City, and yet some of the attitudes have been, especially one of the characters, Julia, have been shaped to some degree by the circumstances of New York.
Yeah, one thing that's really interesting to me as a writer is to find situations where at first you look at this particular arrangement or situation and you think, how can somebody be in this? And how can, in today's day and age, a woman find herself in a polygamous relationship?
Do you know of situations like that here in New York?
Yeah, I do. And one thing we can do in fiction that you can do in other forms is peel off those masks and those layers, and eventually, hopefully by the end of that story, a reader will understand what led up to it, because you see, it's a very intimate, personal story. In some ways, it's kind of a Latin soap opera, but because it's also happening against the backdrop of this Islamic revival in Uzbekistan, because just to give a little context, and it's about a woman who's living with her college sweetheart. They're married, but then as life in in Uzbekistan and more in her husband's family becomes, as they become more religious, they find him another wife. So he shuttles between these two households, and he loves her, and has another wife for his family. And this is happening today.
And the tension isn't just between the women sharing the same husband, but also between their links to their past lives and their present lives. Was polygamy permitted in the Soviet Union, in Uzbekistan? Is this something that's only happened in the newly independent Muslim-majority states of Central Asia?
It's a good question, it's probably hard to answer in officially, no. I mean, officially, even now, it's not really I'm not sure it's legal. I think there was – I'm not – one of the stands, it is legal, but not in Uzbekistan, I believe. But I think, you know, the Soviet Empire was just vast and giant, and life in the center was different from life in the periphery, and it wasn't quite as controlled in some ways. And, you know, even Georgia, where I'm from, followed its own set of rules, and certainly Uzbekistan did too. So when those structures broke down and the governments in those former republics needed to build, you know, unify their people around something, they dug back into their history and maybe in some ways even exaggerated the role of Islam. So you had these sorts of situations.
Although in the case of Georgia, you have this odd situation where there is a strong sense of Georgian identity, and yet the most famous dictator of the Soviet Union came from Gori, the town that the Russian army just occupied for a little while.
I heard actually that the one thing they didn't bomb.
The Stalin statue was there.
Yeah, they didn't bomb the Stalin Museum. They bombed it back into the Stone Age, but they spared the Stalin Museum. So.
Another part of this, the story we've been talking about, Asal, involves the man, the husband, and his desire to be a success in the United States.
In that particular story, or
well, his success is it more closely linked to what's happened here or to his links to the old country?
It sounds like you're talking about one of the other stories.
Rashid.
Yeah. Oh, well, Rashid is still he's still living in Uzbekistan, but the relationship is that even though she's giving him an ultimatum, they talk on the phone every day. So yes, she is one of these characters that has one foot in one world, but at the same time, her connection, it's very hard to sever it when you have a family somewhere else.
These stories also deal with the different religions that could be found in the former Soviet Union. Do you think that an understanding of that diversity is lost on people in the West?
I don't know. I hope, you know, my job, I guess, is just to show people in their complexity and reflect life as it is. So every kind of story, every kind of book has its own reader, and I certainly don't. Life, say, in Ukraine and in Uzbekistan was certainly as similar as life, you know, in Dixie is to the Pacific Northwest, where, you know, Oregon and its environmental culture. The United States is just a conglomerate of a lot of microcultures, and so was the former Soviet Union. And when it collapsed, you know, new tensions formed between them.
Friends who visited always told me that things were a lot better in places like Tbilisi and Tashkent than they were in Moscow or in Leningrad. You can get food. You could get food. You could get a decent meal. People were had better. There was better service in hotels and things like that. Probably because of older traditions, or maybe because there was an agricultural society that provided for the cities there.
Yeah, I mean, you could always get great fruit, vegetable, nuts, everything in Central Asia. And the people were different. I mean, the Georgians are very hospitable, very friendly people. I lived in Moscow the year before last, and after having grown up in Georgia, for me, it was a culture shock, just the way people spoke to each other, you know.
You grew up speaking Russian?
I did grow up speaking Russian, but I hadn't really lived in Russia proper. I visited, but you hear about the legendary rudeness of in places like Moscow. And on one hand, it's a grand world city with wonderful things to do. On the other hand, it's just this giant village where, you know, people can spit on you or humiliate you. And Georgia was in some ways a very diverse place, which was what was wonderful about it. It had Armenians, Azerbaijani, Germans, Poles, and even when I was living in Moscow and met some of my family's old friends who had come from Georgia, and they were saying we were citizens of Tbilisi. We weren't citizens of Georgia, we were citizens of Tbilisi because it was such an international city.
Well, we're seeing with the fall of communism, that changing everywhere. Now Ossetians are doing ethnic cleansing. They've accused Georgians of engaging mm-hmm. in ethnic cleansing. In the old Yugoslavia, there were horrible situations. So perhaps a repressive regime keeps that diversity going in ways that democracy won't, or new nationalisms suddenly set people upon each other.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure throughout the past 15 years if there have been too many good guys in all of these struggles. I think each of these situations is just so individual.
One of your stories, The Repatriates, is about immigrants who return home. Is that happening a lot? I know during in the early years after the revolution, many people came here, and then the United States didn't turn out to be the fantasy they had imagined, and they wound up going back to the Soviet Union, sometimes to their deaths because Stalin didn't trust them.
You know, and that period's always fascinated me as well. And I think, you know, you see a phenomenon over and over, and you think, well, maybe this is worth looking into as a writer. And I encountered lots of people who suddenly found that there were better opportunities, their career horizons could be better there with this, you know, with the education and the skills that they'd acquired in the States. And some people have gone back and made a lot of money. Other people have sort of gotten stuck.
What kind of life does your character Grisha live before she leaves?
Well, so in the story, Grisha and Lyra are a married couple, and she's really kind of taken to the life of a suburban wife, and he has bigger ambitions. And it's in some ways it's just a very simple story about the breakup of a marriage, but in other ways it's a little window into some of the things that are happening in Russia today, I think. And that's, you know, it's always great to write stories that are happening against these big changes. So he goes back and sets out on this shining new career, and she finds herself an outsider in her former country.
Where does your title, One More Year, come from? Because it isn't the title of any of the stories.
Yeah, it was the last piece that fell into place for this collection. I really wanted a title that wasn't just too clever or precious, and I started reading through the stories, and in Maya and Yonkers, which is the second story about a mother and her teenage son who comes to visit her after she's been kind of sending him money, and he's become used to seeing her as an ATM machine, more or less. She's been promising to return and raise him, in a sense. And she writes every year, she writes one more year. And he, at one point, they have a fight, and he calls her on it, and he says, you know, when are you going to come back? And you always promised this. And it seemed like so many of the characters had these had these temporary arrangements that seemed to be becoming permanent, which a lot of I'm not saying it's a uniform immigrant experience, but it was the experience of the types of people who I wrote about, and it was in some ways it was their motto, but they didn't say it out loud, and it was a thread that went across the stories.
Now, your family is from the Ukraine, and you moved to Georgia.
My father's family is from Georgia, and my mother's is from the Ukraine.
But you've had a double immigrant experience, haven't you?
I pretty much grew up in Georgia, and because my mother's family was from the Ukraine, I spent my summers there. So, you know, I guess I have access in some ways to both, but pretty much Georgia was my home.
And you write in English?
Yeah, of course.
Well, not of course. I mean, Nabokov did it, but not many others have been able to.
Well, Nabokov also invented his own words.
But is Russian ever there in the back of your head when you're writing?
Yeah, I think.
I mean, do you think it's affected the way you think about English?
I think having access to other languages always enriches your prose, and there's a lot of other American writers who are fluent in other languages, Italian and French, and who are also translators. To me, it's kind of one big language, and it's there, but English is really the one that I've chosen to pursue my craft in.
Sana Krasikov's short story collection is One More Year. It is published by Spiegel Anne Grau, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.